Welcome to Let's Talk About The Music. The music is everywhere. I am Shells, your host. What makes this show unique is that our guests choose their own music topics, speaking from rich discussions filled with personal stories and insights. In some of those episodes, we share music industry thought through the eyes of those working within the independent music industry. And remember, Let's Talk About Music is not just a podcast, it's a multimedia experience. You can actually enjoy it as a blog or both audio as Audioboom, Spotify, and Podcaster, or a visual format on YouTube. Just search for official Let's Talk About The Music talk show. So grab your headphones or tune in visually and let's have a musical adventure together on letstalkaboutthemusic.com. Hey everybody, this is Shells here from Let's Talk About The Music. We're going to be talking to promotions on episode 9. We have two different individuals who do two different promotions. We have Stephen James Moore, who is an online specialist who owns Independent Music Promotions, is a music PR out there in Canada. And we're also going to talk to Pacific Northwest, the goth royalty herself, Morgan. And now before we get into their conversation, let's talk about the history of band promotions. Ready? All right. It's a lot of information, so sit tight. Now, the rise of independent labels and roles of fanzines and influence on the internet has been a huge impact on the independent musicians that start with the independent labels. It has been a promotional music since the post-war of the United States. The Velvet Underground was the first band to create a cult following as an independent label. In the 1990s, saw the rise of influence of labels like Sub Pop, Merge, and Matador. Am I saying this correctly? I hope so. Now, the fanzine and music reviews are helping the independent musicians promote their music and indie artists in 1990. It's kind of what Let's Talk About The Music doing now with our blogs. I'm doing band reviews to help you guys promote yourselves. That's why also what this show's all about too. Now, the internet has been a major influence on spreading of the independent music, like Radiohead's Kids A was the first album to promote entirely online. Today, artists can market and sell music streaming websites, social media, and music sharing platforms. Now, the print media used print music to promote their music events and reports should interview musicians to build trust in the public. However, print media was limited to people who purchased copies of magazines and newspaper. Flyers and posters, we see them everywhere. They are used for advertising upcoming local events. They could be placed on locations where the target audience will be likely to notice them. Now, music festivals. The very first music festival was Lollapalooza, became influenced in the 1990s. And after that, the independent music festival has skyrocketed everywhere, featuring nothing but independent musicians. Now, the rise of the band merge and the roles of record labels and the merge of digital attributes. Ready? Now, the band merch became popular, including t-shirts, badge, buttons, etc. in 1970. Bill Graham, a German-born concert promoter, was a pioneer of modern band merch. Some novelty examples for the Monkees, who created t-shirts on their tour in 1967. Grateful Dead did launch their tie-dye shirts in 1971. So that is the irony of promotions. It is so important that musicians, band promoters of all sorts, come together and work together to make independent musicians live in more community base. So it's not like, oh, it's all about the promoter. They gotta do this. Oh, it's all the band. No, we all have to work together to provide a service for the independent musicians. And that's what the new Let's Talk About the Music, well, the original one did too, but more want to cater into that aspect to make sure that you guys are getting your promotion heard as best I possibly can. So again, go to check out the blogs. I do have some reviews and I'll be going back on more reviews very shortly. So now, further ado, let's get and dive into the conversation with Morgan and Steve James Moore right after Papa Satch plays the brand new theme song. Hit it, guys. Hey everybody, this is Shells here from Let's Talk About the Music. We're going to be talking to promotions on episode 9. We have two different individuals who do two different promotions. We have Stephen James Moore, who is an online specialist who owns independent music promotions, is a music PR out there in Canada. And we're also going to hear talk to Pacific Northwest, the goth royalty herself, Morgan. And now, before. All righty, recording in progress. All right, so welcome to episode 9 of the new Let's Talk About the Music. Real quickly, I am Shells, the host of Let's Talk About the Music. I do have where this show is about. Promoters, band promoters, DJ promoters, anything that's going to promote the independent musicians wherever we are. Maybe you guys have learned some tips and tricks from these professional promoters. We have Morgan Ann and
Morgan.
Mr. Morgan. I knew I was saying it right. I was overthinking it. And then we have Stephen James as
Hi, Morgan.
well. So I want you guys to take about 5 minutes of each, 5 minutes of each. Get to know how who you guys are, what you guys do, and I'll have my little timer on. And when you guys hit that one button, that 1 minute, I'll put one, and then go from there. Okay, all right, ladies first, go for it.
Hi, my name is Morgan. I have been doing performance art work in Seattle and the Pacific Northwest at large from 2011. Currently, I am the events director for the Rendezvous in Belltown here in Seattle. I also am a performer, producer, DJ. I am a Jill of all trades and very much have a whatever gig I can have the capability for, I'm gonna do the work. And so I these days mostly help from the venue side and help book shows and help producers put events together. But I have a long history of producing my own shows, mostly burlesque as well as live music. My professional partner Vena Kala and I do a series called Bands and Burlesque, where we book a couple of local bands and a couple of burlesque performers. And it's a really great mixture of two types of performance arts that normally aren't seen together that much. Yeah, I feel like I don't know how to fill the rest of the time there, but I do all sorts of stuff and I have been producing and promoting shows as a DJ, as a burlesque performer, as a venue booker, as a show booker for all over a decade now.
Okay, so who inspired you to actually promote?
I'm sorry?
Who inspired you to promote?
Whatever I'm working on at the time, whatever's the
So
priority.
no individual actually got you into promoting at all?
Oh, into promoting. I mean, it's a necessity. Promoting is a necessity when it comes to shows. If you are, especially in the age of social media, you have to do a little bit of every job. And the reality is, if you are throwing a show, if you want people to show up, you have to promote it. You have to find a way to tell people about it. And that's something where I've used my being chronically online as a millennial who grew up first generation to really grow up with the internet, social media is a really big side of what I'm on. I'm still on Facebook. I know that's not necessarily the most widely used platforms these days, but making jumps over to things like Instagram and now Blue Sky, TikTok as well. Each platform has its own pros and cons. I'm still stuck on Facebook, but learning the changing and evolving landscape as it changes and evolves.
All right, cool. All right. So we're gonna go over to S Steve. Steve, I know you have your own magazine, so you have your own business out there. So tell us where you are, and you got 5 minutes.
All right, I probably won't take all of that, but my name is Stephen James Moore. First and foremost, and I think this sometimes is important, sometimes it's not required for a promoter to be a musician or an artist themselves necessarily. In my own experience, I think it certainly does help. So my main passion in life is I'm a musician first and foremost, and I started playing music at age 13, 14. Started making demos that I would not show you right now when I was 15 years old. And building up, learning more and more. And I have been in a whole bunch of bands over the years. My primary genres, at least personally, that I've found that I'm good at, happen to be metal, punk, rock, and a lot of related subgenres. Industrial, I've done electronic music, more experimental. But I do think it's a good thing for artists to, at the end of the day, learn their lane, l learn what they're really good at, and then lean into that. I think it's critical. Because you can't do everything. So I've released about 10 albums over the years. My last album was released on April 16th, with my project Post Death Soundtrack. And this is a doom metal, thrash, heavy rock album. And the album's called Veil Lifter. It's wherever you choose to listen to your music. As far as being a promoter, that was started just from a really practical perspective. There's usually, as far as I've heard as well, there's usually one person in each project who is interested in marketing and who wants to handle that, take on that torch. I was that guy over the years. So I would be the guy who didn't just go home and chill out, and I would be looking into it, looking into ways to progress, taking it on mentally as if we're going to battle, we're trying to make some progress. So I just continued to learn over the years, DIY. I really like guys like Henry Rollins, who kind of forged his own way. Independent music promotions, my company is an extension of direct experience from a musician who played for, 25 years, and an attempt to come through for artists in a practical way, be ethical. I started this company. Negative influences are a big thing for me, just like positive ones too. But I wasn't really too happy with the education in music marketing. So I wrote my own book that was just very brass tacks down to earth. And I was disappointed, like many musicians are these days, by a major PR firm working for my album. Ended up turning out a few reviews. I ended up landing 50 to 60. I thought, I'm gonna do this. So that's where I launched Independent Music Promotions. It was just set up as a practical idea. And the other avenue for IMP is advocating for artists who might be experimental, multi-genre, bold in any way, politically charged. I have the blessing to work with all kinds of people. So it's a little bit the opposite of, there's a lot of PR companies that want you to sound particularly mainstream, anything like that. I like to work with eclectic artists, and I often get the question, like, where does this fit in? You fit, like, with keywords, you fit in. Everybody fits in.
Right.
There's no such thing. I mean, you could be playing with spoons on distortion. I mean, you'll probably fit in somewhere. So that's often something that's just thought in their heads. So I really wanted IMP just to be an extension of out there, an extension of my art and my approach, standing up for others in that scenario.
Right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so what we're going to be doing, I want to ask some questions for you guys, and you guys can bounce off of each other, ask each other questions, because this is a panel kind of thing of a podcast. That's what I'm trying to build anyway. So now, in your promotional experiences, now I know you guys promote different genres, but what is your favorite genre that you guys want to promote? We'll start with Morgan.
My heart is definitely in very theatrical productions. I love really big themed nights where people go all out and are like, this is I did a Beetlejuice themed night at the start of this year, and we had shadow cast performers, we had bands, we had sideshow, we had a magician, like we had a little bit of everything, and it was all centered around the theme of Beetlejuice. And it was a lot of fun. And those, I think, are really easy to get people excited about, especially if you pick a theme or a genre or something that has a wide reach. People, myself included, love to get dressed up or show off the one cool stripy suit they have in their closet. And so for me, a lot of fun. And also, there's a lot of advertising to work with, when you can make the design based off of pre-existing things, you can really evoke a lot of cool feelings. I feel like sometimes having some constraints as an artist give you an opportunity to be more creative. If you just have a blank piece of paper, where do you even start? But if you start with, okay, we're throwing a circus, or we're it's a 4th of July party, or it's Halloween, or whatever. I really like when there's a cohesive idea at the center that everything kind of grows off of.
All right, cool. All right, Steven.
I really related to that. I would 100% agree, and I've actually made that pivot even in my own work, because just as an example that relates to that, with my current project, I've had three previous albums that were eclectic and proud of them, a lot of good stuff. But it takes you out of the energy a little bit when someone doesn't have singular sound. And of course, there's artists as well that have a really eclectic sound and it works. What I like to work with is anybody, working in PR, my main qualification is anybody good at what they do, like, truly good at what they do, and they also care about it. So, and then the third qualification is, do I think I can be helpful in this process? So that being said, I do work with everybody from Americana and country artists all the way to progressive metal, electronic. I personally like ambient and IDM music a lot, and jazz, blues, soul, pretty much the gamut. If I only wanted to work with, select few genres, it probably wouldn't work quite so well. So I do try to be open and have those qualifications, and I like multi-genre artists too, that they think they're strange, but if it's good, it's good. That's my belief. I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of have a inner feeling, when something's good. So yeah, I like working with all that.
All
And
right,
I
cool.
feel like,
Go ahead.
oh, I was going to say, building off of that, when you have people who are a very specific genre, that scene very quickly just shrinks and it becomes, especially when you're trying to get reach, which, for promotion, whether you're promoting live events, whether you're promoting your album or whatever. That community is going to be very closed off. If you open yourself up to those other genres, you're reaching people, you just tripled your audience. You just reach people that maybe were only interested in this other thing. And then you can show them this thing is great. And I think also to build off your point, it is the best when you see people making art who actually want to be making art, who are really enjoying themselves. I think there are an unfortunate number of folks do get into any kind of art because they think it will be easy. And what they don't realize is that being a professional artist is actually way harder, and you have to work so much harder at it just to get those little inches into a mile. And when you, it's great when you see people who are really doing it out of the love. And hopefully there's also money in it for them too, but I feel like no matter what kind of art you're making, if you're not, if it's not serving you, if it's not giving you joy, if you're not enjoying making it, then what are you doing?
right. I was told once a long time ago that if you are trying to do music scene for the money, you're doing it wrong. Money is great, but you gotta have the passion for it.
Yes, and to be clear, people deserve to get paid for their
Yes.
time and their efforts because it is so much work. But unfortunately, it doesn't carry a lot of value.
No, it does not. All right, so do you guys ever go and scout new artists, or do they come to you?
I have an inbox full of a lot of stuff. So there's definitely a lot right now. It feels like a lot of them come to me, but I try to keep my ear out. I do pay attention to, I follow a bunch of local bands on Facebook and Instagram and across social media, and I do see who they're playing shows with. I see the names that are coming up more frequently. And then if that name comes up in my inbox, or if I have a gap in a show I'm trying to fill, there's kind of that going there. So it's kind of a conscious effort, but it's also at this point very much just habit of being on social media and seeing whose name am I seeing, who's posting, who's going to shows, who is performing shows, even if they're little hole in the wall dive bar shows. Those are great. Those are some of my favorites, honestly.
All right, Steve.
Myself, since I don't work in the live industry, I worked on search engine optimization for a long time. That was in order to build up independent music promotions so that it would be clearly noticed by musicians as an option for their marketing, as well as the book. I did a lot of learning on that for years, just to simply get yourself entrenched in Google, social media. And this is something that I do. It's just a practical thing that I now do for my artists. And so, as far as scouting, my habit with that is I have my favorites over the years, and I love all the classics. And I also respect lineage, music history, I love Louis Armstrong, Little Richard, all the way to I constantly get into modern bands every month. That being said, often modern bands are, they likely have their own structure. They have management. They have a label, things like that. So the search engine optimization has set things up where I get most of my inquiries are from independent artists, and they come in just naturally through finding me.
Okay.
But yeah, it's my whole life. So I kind of obsess over everything. I try to find new music and expand that way, and yeah, and be open as well.
All right. So share us a successful story that you actually, well, you did Beetlejuice. So is there anything else that you actually promoted? It was very, very successful, and you're very, very proud of it, and you want to do it again over and over again?
I'll start. Honestly, the first ones that come to mind are some of my earliest shows. One of the very first shows I ever promoted was called Starving Artists on Parade at the Knock Knock, which is a venue that doesn't exist anymore. And I very distinctly remember the first time we ever got 100 people out on a Monday night, and I was so proud of myself, and I still am proud of doing that. That was a great accomplishment. And honestly, I've just been chasing that dragon ever since. Not that I haven't done great things since then. And I live in the basement level of my place that I have. And so on my stairway is all the posters of shows that I sold out in pre-sales or that I am particularly proud of. Because I think, yeah, like I said, that's the addiction, that's the high that you chase. And so I think it's really important that when you get it, that you really bask in it and really take the time to enjoy it. Because it's a lot of work.
Right. All right, so any accessible stores that you want to do, especially as diving more into your project, your independent musician promotion, do you have any successful stories with that particular project?
I think that the most successful thing or most rewarding thing for me generally is just keeping up to the promise. When I started it, I had a vision for coming through with a high amount of press for every artist that I've worked with and taking a hit if it didn't happen, which and that's what's happened since 2011, launching the company. Every single artist I've worked with has gotten a very good amount of press, as well as other residual shares and results, whether it be social media, playlists, radio, podcast ads, things like that. And in any rare case, if there's, say, a family emergency or anything like that, where you basically, I take the lesson from my dad about the golden rule that he always taught me, was just do it or don't. And if there's a situation where you recognize that, life stuff has gone on, you communicate, and I'm happy with being that rare person in the industry who will give refunds if, if there's ever a case like
Right.
that. And that's the reason why, feedback and reviews have generally been really good. Another highlight is having the opportunity to work with a Canadian icon, Biff Naked, who's kind of like the Iggy Pop of Canada. She's very much a punk alternative icon, and I grew up with her. I grew up watching her on Much Music, Canadian MTV. And so it was a real thrill to work with her, and I've had the chance to work with other people that I really admire, from high popularity to independent level. Yeah, it's just gratifying. I think the main thing is to come through.
Okay. That's right. You're from Canada. So what part of Canada are you from?
I was born in Toronto, and I've lived in Calgary my whole most of my life, and I've also lived in Vancouver for several years. Vancouver doesn't really tend to make as much sense to me as Calgary. It's a little more practical. Vancouver is more like the New York of Canada. It's a little bit mad, yeah.
I got a friend of mine who's in Edmonds, Canada. So, calling. So I she's a singer songwriter up in Edmonds. So pretty
Are
cool.
Edmonds or Edmonton or?
Edmonton. Thank you,
Oh yeah,
Edmonton.
I'm about 3.5 hours away from there.
Okay, cool. Rock on,
Yeah,
rock on.
they're close by.
So look up Shauna Speck. That's who my girlfriend is up there. Shauna
Okay.
Speck. Yeah. All
Sounds good.
right. So now, do you guys deal with the press at all? Anybody, the magazines or anything up here?
I'll go on this one. That's mainly what I deal with, since I don't deal with the live industry booking, except when I'm in bands. I do a little bit of that, but my specialty is different. I started with press because I found that was a really challenging thing for artists to make happen. A lot of artists don't know how to approach it. They often are sometimes condescended into thinking only of their local scene, because local scenes can and do often act in a snobby way, right? So my whole part of my idea early on as a musician and to launch this was reach outside of your zone and find other interests, find other connections that can help you out. Because often when you have serious press clips, magazines, blogs, things like that from other areas, that can start to move the needle in your local area, because you can't expect to do everything at once. And if you just have a hyper focus on your local scene, there's probably only a couple of publications there.
See, and I definitely, that's actually the perfect jumping off point, because I only interact with the super hyper local, but our goals are different there, where my goals are to get people to come to a concert. And you really only want to be hitting that
Exactly.
hyper local. You want only the people within driving distance.
Exactly. And I 110% agree. Like that is the goal. With other things, press, say licensing or just any other potential opportunities, I take the perspective that's, try to do everything at once. But as far as live, you want to make yourself known, and you want to be a part of the community and talk to other, like, make yourself known at shows, hang out with other musicians, get in conversations, and not be a snob in that sense. The only thing I brought up about the locals, often your city doesn't know much about you until you go elsewhere too. There's some truth to that. Yeah, it all helps.
All right, so Morgan, have you deal with the press a lot over in Seattle?
Well, like I was just saying, it's all about the hyper local. For us here in Seattle, that is the stranger, which yeah, we have a I have a really good relationship with the stranger. I've always been submitting stuff to their calendar. Every once in a while, they've done some cool write-ups of events. I have bought ad space from them before, but they're another really great resource in the hyperlocal is Seattle Gay News. I want to make sure I give them a shout out because they do a lot of really great work as well. But it is, yeah, that really specific. Because again, my goal is to target people who are already in Seattle. They are within driving distance and they're going to want to possibly come out to whatever show.
All right. You guys want, let's see here. Now, you guys want to stay local, then you're. No. What about new listeners? You guys try to get new listeners coming to your shows? Is how does that work? I mean, are you still basically? I don't know how to answer this question properly.
I think, one thing that I really do is it's very easy to put together a bill that is three bands of a very specific genre and to reach out to the audience for that specific genre and be like, hey, here is this, I'm trying to think of something weirdly specific. Here's this thing that you're into. And, say there's 20 people who are diehard fans of that thing. Great. All 20 people show up to your show. They're all interested in all three bands. They already know, maybe they already know two of them and they don't know the third. One thing I really like to do is get really eclectic with who I'm booking. Whether that's an all music show, what kind of mixing things up a little bit where the genres are touching, but they're not necessarily the same, which gets, 20 people from genre A and 20 people from genre B, that's 40 people at your show. Or for bands and burlesque, we get a really good split of the crowd. There's a bunch of people who come out to see the punk bands, and then there's a bunch of people who come out to see the burlesque, and the burlesque people leave having heard and learned about a new cool local punk band that they like, and the punk people leave having seen some cool burlesque that they now like. And not only does that increase, the amount of people you're reaching, your audience, it also is going to make those audiences grow independently because, the punk fan just discovered he likes burlesque. The burlesque fan just realized that they love punk. And also, as someone who's just like really big on the idea that this scene is big enough for all of us, and there's a lot of really amazing, talented artists. Throw them all in a jar, shake it up, see what happens.
All right. So let's take a break for a second because I want to talk about COVID, the impact of that situation. So since before COVID, how was the promotion of the shows? And now after COVID, how is it now? Is it get better? Is it worse? Still slow? Sorry, trying to build. What is your take of that? I'll start with Steve.
Well, for me, there have been changes, not so much with shows, not being my lane per se. One of the main changes was in production. So, as far as things like producing physical product, like especially vinyl, within COVID, I learned that, and this is a struggle for artists who they want to use vinyl as a primary selling point when they do play live and they invest and they take the effort to do that. Pricing has gone up for everyone. It's gone up maybe 30 to 40%, both for people who enjoy seeking out new music, collecting vinyl, as well as those producing it. And also the timelines have, I think it's recovered a little bit, but it went from, possibly 2 months to maybe 6 to 8 months, and it still hasn't, it's never really gone. It still hasn't quite recovered. So things are more challenging for physical product. For artists, the other thing is obviously, and once again, this is not my expertise, but I know that touring has become much more difficult, artists more expensive, and it hasn't really recovered yet. So that's a little concerning on both levels. Like if you're in the industry, you're feeling for bands, and also just as a music fan. you really want them to be able to move around on a practical level. So there's things like that haven't really recovered so much. As far as what I do, the online marketing, magazines, blogs, everyone has their difficulties, but it's the process has stayed relatively similar. And
Okay. All
we still expand on and learn on that.
How about Seattle?
It has definitely had a whole wave and range. I mean, obviously COVID shut down live performance stuff, and there was definitely a, I want to say like a 6 month period of time coming out of lockdown where shows, people were so excited to go to shows again. People were just like, we, the first couple of shows that we did out of lockdown, and we were very nervous to do them because we didn't want to act too soon. We didn't want to put people in any kind of danger. And you know, COVID is still happening. It is still a concern. But there, when we did those first few live shows, boom, we sold out so quickly. And then I think people really got used to being inside so much. They really got used to live streaming, to really being able to set their own experience. And I have noticed definitely a dip. I've noticed that large scale shows are doing very well. Places that are playing the stadiums and, you know, the big amphitheater and places like that, those shows, there's a lot of legacy acts that are going on tour right now, but for the little guy, for, you know, the independent musicians, it is a lot harder. And with some of the production companies or the places that were actually producing vinyl getting shut down, as he was talking about, you know, with the supply chain issues that come from just the physical stuff, it is a lot harder. And the downside, I think, well, one of the many downsides as we come out of, as we're on the other side of lockdown. I lost my train of thought. Oh, when it comes to people who are used to setting their own experiences at home, when it comes to people who are listening only to Spotify or streaming, it's a lot easier to get trapped in that algorithm where you're only getting exposure to what AI has deemed worthy of our exposure, which I think, you know, is a whole other problem in of itself. But I think that people have become very comfortable with not going out, as is their right. I think that there are still a lot of people who are very understandably not wanting to go into public spaces. They're not ready yet. I have a lot of friends who are immunocompromised, and COVID is still a very real fear for them. And helping organize COVID conscious shows as well is something that comes up on my plate every once in a while of how do we make sure that we're doing this in a way that everyone feels safe? And how do we cater to the people who have become very comfortable with not going out? And how do we get people to come out and feel safe and happy and want to be there, has definitely been a huge challenge for sure.
All right. All righty. Do. I'll talk about the crisis. Yeah, here you go. Here, the crisis on stage. So, well, Steve, you don't really do live music, but so this is for Morgan. So if you're going to have, is there any crisis that has come up on stage or while you're promoting, and how do you handle that kind of crisis?
I think I would ask for a more specific example. What are we talking, an
In jet.
electrical fire on stage? Are we talking the theater lost power the day of the show? What's the level we're talking here? Because I'm to give you time to think here. If there's one thing I've learned in over a decade in actually performance arts, my whole damn life, my daycare was full, so my mom put me in a theater class. And there's one thing I've learned from performance art, it's that something will go wrong. Somebody's going to forget something, crucial. Something's not going to work. Some bus is going to catch on fire. I don't know. Something is going to go wrong. It has happened. I've never seen an event go 100% smoothly. And I think, just as he was speaking earlier about how there's always one person who is really wants to be the social media person and take that reign, awesome. Let the person who's the anxiety person over prepare. Let there be a first aid kit and a gear bag that has two of everything. I spent a year long contract as a wedding DJ where I did a wedding a weekend for a year straight. And every time I encountered a weird adapter or a weird plug-in, and I thought, man, I wish I had this adapter or this cable, I'd pull out my phone and I'd order it. And now I have a gear bag that I can walk into any venue and be like, all right, we're doing XLR to HDMI. Those two aren't even, we're doing something crazy and I'm ready for it. And I think that the important thing to remember is that something's going to go wrong. Doesn't matter how ready you are, something's going to go wrong. Usually it's going to be something dumb. It's going to be something so stupid, and you're going to afterwards be like, wow, I can't believe that was just because the power cord wasn't plugged in or something. And all you can do is roll with it, take a deep breath, and just fix what you can.
Steve, do you have anything like that in your area? Expertise?
Not so much. I think it's a similar, there's a similar aspect to music marketing is thinking in a practical step-by-step manner. It's key. It's always key. And you need to pivot often and not catastrophize over over small things and just move on out. But the reason I was smiling there is it's a little bit, I've noticed it's a little bit similar to when you're setting up stereo systems or things like that. It's usually one insufferable tiny little thing, just a cord in the
Something
wrong.
yeah, I used to
That's
be
it.
I also did wedding re DJs a long time ago too, and I remember being at a DJ shindig and something always went wrong. A speaker didn't work right, or a CD player, we had CDs back then, didn't want to work, and so we had to make do of what we had. So I get you, kind of like what happened this today at the show. We had a little malfunction and we got it to work.
Yep, and I pulled out a secondary device. I was like, all right, we're going to use the backup to the backup. I recently spent 2 full hours trying to troubleshoot for a film screening that was happening at the theater I work at, and they couldn't figure out why the audio wasn't working. Everything was plugged in correctly. We had sound checked this a week before. Everything was turned on, nothing was muted. The volume on their iPad wasn't turned up all the way.
Oh my goodness.
That was it. That was
Wow.
2 hours just to be like, oh, the volume needed to be on. Good job. Great going, everyone. But that's how it is sometimes. And now it's a funny story.
Right. Now it is a funny story. Right.
It always is afterwards. That's what I find.
I used to. When I used to perform a great deal, either in your DJing, when things like that happen, I always get an anxiety attack, and now I'm just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. You want to care just enough to solve the problem.
Right, and I have your brain go overload on things. Is that, yeah, I get you. All right, so now with COVID coming out, COVID has a lot of new musicians coming out trying to make their own mark, their own world, mark in the world. So, what is your advice to them? They're just now starting out. So, what's your voice? What is your advice to new artists coming out and DJs too, or performers? All above.
I would say for me, the paramount thing is love it. It is love it and deeply mean it. And get good at it in your own way, which can there can be a lot of differences to that. There's all kinds of there's too many resources. There's enough. It's option paralysis, just like the Dillinger Estate Plan album is titled after. There's enough resources that you can get overwhelmed. So the main thing is to lean into your loves and build step by step on those. I think that makes a lot of sense because whatever you do, one of the most harmful things to a musician, an actor, anything like that, is when they don't recognize what allowed them to do what they do, or their predecessors, things like that. I've had people tell me, I don't like to listen to any music that wasn't released in the last couple of weeks. I thought, oh, well, goodness me, that's a real shame, because that's the whole idea of recorded music, and it's always recorded in the now. So I think some humility is key, and expanding, knowing what you're getting good at and what you're really passionate about, and just stepping forward from there. It's a total key for me.
Absolutely. I think, the big thing for new folks is look to others, see what's working for other people. And, that age-old advice of find the most successful person and see what they're doing and emulate that. I think that also just being a good member of your community, whether that's your literal physical in-person community, going to shows and being supportive. Whether that's your online community, being a part of the Reddit, the subreddits, or the Facebook groups, or the Blue Sky chains, or whatever the things are, but interacting with your community. One of the biggest mistakes that I made early in my career is, or was really putting my foot in my mouth because I was like, I can do it all on my own and I don't need anybody's help. But you do. That's a lie. You need the people around you. You need to build a reputation of being a good person to work with. And that'll get you really far.
Preaching to
And
the
that just
choir,
makes me think
lady.
of, oh, sorry, just quickly, that just makes me think of, I think that at least myself, this is how I feel. I love seeing musicians, famous musicians, independent. I think it's really important. I like seeing them in interview and giving it up, like giving it up to their heroes. I enjoyed watching like Kurt Cobain interviews where he's talking about Beatles, the Sex Pistols. He's giving it up to like his lineage. And Scott Weiland did the same thing. He talks about David Bowie all the time. And I think there's a key to that because it shows passion and humility, and it's a like people tune into it. I think the only issue comes about when an artist might, express like, oh, I don't sound like anyone. It's like, we're not saying that you sound like anyone. It's like even Bjork has her contemporaries, which might be other experimental artists like Bowie and, so on and so forth. So
Nothing exists in a vacuum.
yeah, and it's a beautiful thing to be like, here's what I love, and I also do something unique that is my own filter, because I take in all these different influences, and it's always going to be different. I have, riffs and songs in my head from a young age that I constantly tune back in on. Whatever comes out of me doesn't, it ends up being filtered, of course, and that's the beauty of it. It's always going to sound different,
I think
Yeah.
building off of that too, I want to really emphasize for everyone that like that what you said just brought a feeling of like you're never too good to go back to basics. You're never too good to retake a 101 class or a refresh on something or go listen to those bands you listened to in middle school, like whatever it is, like sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need just like, all right, here's the fundamentals and that will unlock stuff. I think anytime I face like a creative block, that's always go back to the fundamentals. Let's redo 101.
That's interesting how you say that because when I was trying to figure out how I want to redo this show, I've been at Clover Park for some time, and one thing they have had me do was to go listen to radio shows, go listen to podcasts, go listen to what how they do it, how they're doing, how they're structuring it, and I would write a report on it, or I'll do my own little research. My biggest thing was KISW, see how they did the morning show, the evening show, and all that stuff. And so I will write my own reports on it, and then I will take little bits and pieces, like, okay, I get what you're saying. So I think if musicians get in a rut, they don't know what to do, or even promoters, your guys yourself, you guys can go back to basics and see what the kids are doing these days. Or what they were doing now. So it's a good point. Come back, go back and think things. Yeah, cool.
And for me, it's mostly about it's about passion. You somehow
Yeah.
need to keep you need to keep the flame lit. Like I've worked with in bands, like in my own bands, and you know other situations in promotion. I've worked with artists who like I only listen to X, X, and X from you know this age onward, and you have to think to yourself. You think, okay. And I've worked with all genres too. This is just an example, but working with metal musicians who say things like, "Oh, Black Sabbath kind of missed me." It's like, well, like, or it's, I mean, that you realize that was the birth of your genre, right? So it's like history. Like you kind of need to. Like incorporate it somehow. It's not so much looking for who's currently, that's important too, looking who's currently doing what you want to do, learning from that, integrating it. But it's also critical to try to integrate some of those inspirations, and both can be true. So you can continually delve into that for inspiration. And still get into a bunch of new stuff as well. Do it all, you know?
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Anything to piggyback on that one?
No, I think that's key. That's key for me.
Okay.
I hear people say they're like, oh, I grew out of Nirvana. It's like, I still listen to them often. I listen to a million other things, but I delve into them often because it's part of you know who I am, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think I've known some people who think they're too good to listen to Nirvana, and those people are not, I don't know, I don't want to make any personal judgment calls, but yeah, I think
Yeah.
it's when the people think they're, it's the elitism that's there, oh, I'm too good, I could never, not Nirvana,
Exactly.
well, screw you, like I was raised on Nirvana, like that's my childhood and influence who I became as a person, and so even if I really like your usage of the phrase of, oh, I've outgrown. It's like, all right, even if I don't sit down and listen to them as much, I think that's still fundamental to who I am as a person and who a lot of my favorite artists today probably could trace their origins back.
And here I am wearing my plaid. Yeah.
Yep.
Nirvana. Exactly. I think at the end of the day, it's often about more than just music because, like, no matter the style, people grow up and they might have trauma or they might be bullied or have mental health challenges. And this particular music, whatever it is, comes in and really helps them to a massive degree.
Yeah.
So there's something about being loyal to that and not just being you can carry it with you.
Right.
Yeah, I'll probably listen to them to my dying day.
That makes me another topic here. So, how would you guys deal with your mental health and dealing with all this music, the promotion? How would you, if you guys get so anxiety going on, how do you guys center yourself that, okay, I'm here, I'm going to breathe, and show must go on? So, how do you cope with that?
Poorly. I think, on a more serious note, like there's, I think the, I am the person who, when everyone is freaking out, I am the calm one in the storm. And then it's the anxiety leading up to, I'm an anxious mess. As soon as things are going, I'm going. But that's me and who I am as a person. And so how I cope with that is in that anxiety leading up to things, I try to over prepare and I try to listen to that anxiety and go, okay, what do you think is the worst case scenario? What do you think is going to happen? And then sometimes if you just kind of sit in that and you go, well, this thing won't work. Okay, well, what if we bring an adapter for that? And sometimes you can kind of self-soothe that. Sometimes it's totally not rooted in any kind of logic at all. And you're just like, okay, what do we think the worst thing that could happen? Oh, the building's going to explode and I'm going to have a heart attack. And it's like, well, there's no accounting for that. But I find that when things are going wrong, to remind yourself that it's going to be a funny story later and that, nothing is as serious as it feels in the moment. And I say this not to be dismissive of anyone's art, but it's just a show. It's just a record. It's, yes, these things are life altering, but there's nothing that can go so wrong that no one ever loves you again. Like there is a bottom on it. And like sometimes that's not reassuring to hear, and sometimes it is.
Right. And Steven, what about you?
Yeah, I think through music, I've developed a habit or a philosophy of just radical self-honesty, because we all go through situations in our lives where you deal with a lot of people who have difficulty admitting fault or admitting, things like that. Radical self-honesty means being true to how you're feeling at the moment, your weaknesses, things like that. And just as the saying goes, it's okay to not be okay.
Right.
It's an important thing for anybody to know, including musicians. And I think it's important for anybody in the industry to what, like, everybody has their own niches, but one of mine personally is having had the experience of growing up with depression and things like that, and anxiety. That's part of my teaching, and that's part of the fun of it. Seems strange to say, but I'm able to just say it, and that's I find that can be helpful, the openness to people. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that as we become more accepting culturally of these things, I mean, a word that's very popular right now is to normalize, and I think it's very important. I think it's a good thing to normalize these conversations and be like, here's what's going on. I have very heavy ADHD. I find that if I
Okay.
tell people, like, it's okay to email me if I don't respond in 2 days. It's okay to bug me. It's okay to, or even telling people, I'm not going to remember this. I need to write it down. I need to take notes. Having that, being very open about it up front, it makes it a lot easier for whatever those accommodations are that you need. And then things run smoother because you're creating a system that works for you rather than trying to force yourself And then it just, you feel bad and you feel guilty because, well, why can't I do this like everyone else? Or, but that's an illusion. Everyone else is struggling too.
Right. Yeah, I go back to you guys commenting about you having a teamwork, and I'm always trying to do things by myself, and it's a struggle, and it grows my anxiety to the roof where I gotta try to juggle everything at once. So, and I am also borderline personality disorder with very extreme anxiety attacks. So I tell people about my stuff so that way they'll understand. And I mean, I remember Morgan, we're having a conversation, my head started spinning and she stopped me, goes, "What's going on?" So yeah,
Yeah.
so it's nice to have that the impact and people have understanding of what is going on, and people know you and they can help you get out of that little head of yours. So pretty cool. Okay, so let's go back to you guys and promotions. Do you guys charge anything for people to come in and use your services and stuff like that? I don't care who goes first.
With me being PR, I do charge because I mean, first of all, a lot of what I do ends up being things that I've learned over the years and incorporating more and more practical advertising into the campaign. So it's everything from, Meta advertisements, Google ads,
Oh, okay.
promoting someone's YouTube videos, promoting, doing organic Spotify campaigns. It costs money to host the press kits, distribute them. Plus, I couldn't do it for a job if I didn't charge anything as well, a little bit for my work. But essentially, it expands in a practical way because I keep on learning and I keep on vetting new partners, new potentials, and what I use in the campaigns tend to be things that I have found to work for my own projects, things like that. So, so I do charge. There's a wide range of campaigns, and it's largely choose your own adventure because high percentage of the funds are put back directly into ads.
All right, cool.
It kind of depends on what the individual project is. I do work for a venue, and so a lot of my promotional work that I do is for whatever show or whatever bands are coming through, but it's to serve the larger goal of the venue. And they pay me so that, and then when I do my own shows, I'm doing the promotional work to ensure my own success. And yeah, those things do cost money for sure. It costs a lot of time. It took me, I do a lot of my own posters and design work, but learning, there's kind of this joke of why should I pay you for something that took you 10 minutes to draw? Because I took 10 years learning how to do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I feel like even so, there's a lot that I had to learn. I had to study. I had to get into graphic design and learn about algorithms on social media and learn, all these things. And the payout for those kinds of things when it's my own show is that people show up and I get paid. And if it's through, the venue, then it is. I am fortunate enough that that is something that I can collect an hourly paycheck from.
That's good. Very
But
good.
it took
Very
me
good.
10 years to learn how to do it.
But the thing is, here you are doing it. And now you're, now, do you guys help anybody else who wants to learn your craft? Do you
Oh,
guys pick it?
absolutely.
Okay, go. All right.
I'm a big fan of collaborative efforts of I don't like to gatekeep knowledge, I think the more people know something, cool, awesome. And the then that becomes somebody that I can tap if I'm overwhelmed and I can say, hey, can you share the load with me? Yeah.
What about you, Steve?
In the same way, I don't really, that's the reason why I initially put out the book. Yeah, but on top of that, there's a whole lot of artists that I work with, which is, we become close friends, and that's something that I build on. And there's a lot of people that I just with any artist, really, even when somebody contacts me on day one and they're inquiring, I'll tell them my truth over wanting to, make money or engage in a campaign with them if I feel like they're looking into a certain direction, or if anything is, if they're not really in the position to do something like this. And yeah, I also have friends and acquaintances who I just advise and help and go overboard for, and stick my neck out for. And yeah, that's a good thing. There's really no bars on it whatsoever.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to wrap up this show. So is there any last things you guys want to tell anybody, promotions, new artists, anything out there that you want to say, hey, it's what you got to do, or some advice or anything at all?
Not all
I
confidence. Oh,
sorry,
go
go
ahead.
on, please.
No, you first.
Sorry, I was just going to say myself, I just think step by step is the most important thing, because so many artists, I'm sure you've noticed this too with your live productions, that a lot of artists, they want a one and done. And like you said earlier, it's critical to pat yourself on the back and go step by step. Notice all the small steps, because it really does. Like, even just in my own band recently, every radio show, every podcast, every article, I'm just like, God bless this day, pretty much. Whereas often artists want whatever they perceive as the mountain, a million Spotify streams, things like that. So I would just say, make it up into a massive file and go step by step. That would be all that I would say.
Yeah, I think building off of that, there's a line from the TV show Community that has become my mantra, which is passable and doable. There's a lot of times where you want to reach for the moon, but you need to, land among the stars a little. And I think it's a lot easier. My creative process a lot of the times is to come up with this big grand idea and then ask, okay, what's a more realistic goal? And then once you accomplish that, be like, all right, what's the next step up? How do we build on what we built here? Because you have to take care of those fundamentals. You got to take care of that base stuff. And I think it is important to celebrate when you have that success and also analyze what went wrong and what can be better. The bit of advice that I was ready to jump in on is that not all compensation is monetary. And it's not all, and know your worth, which is to
Yeah.
say, there are times where I will work for free because it's a cause I care about, because I know that the other people in the room are going to be able to help me in other ways, because there's some kind of trade going on. Maybe I'm not getting paid in cash, but I'm getting merchandise for a local store I really like, or maybe I get to support, I'm very passionate about a number of social activism and community aid projects, and there are absolutely things that I'll be like, yeah, I'll go do I did a pride show out in the middle of nowhere, and I got paid like $40 for it. And honestly, I felt bad taking that money because I was like, I just want to see the queer youth have a good time. And that was worth it to me. But I've also, especially in my early years, said yes to everything and done a lot of gigs that were not worth my time, that did not contribute anything to me. And I think it's hard to know the difference, especially because we live under capitalism and I like to eat, but sometimes you can trade a meal for your work.
Right. All right, I got one more question for you guys, and then I'll have you guys plug your social medias. There's a segment from the old show that I am going to continue on with, is allowing the guests turn things around, put me on the hot seat. So you guys can ask me one question each.
Oh man, I wish I had known this. Oh God.
That's why it's called a hot seat. See, you guys are
Yeah.
prepared for the interview. I'm not.
What led you on this path to stick your neck out yourself and decide to advocate for independent musicians and put this much effort and practicality into it?
I love the independent musicians. I got involved with these with the musicians and the promotions, everything for a young age. I'm a young DJ age, and I just fell in love with them and listened to a band that had a hard time getting their voices out and being heard. So I want to be that platform. I do also do my own promotions. I'm not really good at it, so I made this podcast to help with my promotions. I rather promote everybody else when it comes to my promoting my show. I don't know why I have a blockage when I come to my own promotions, but I like promoting other people. And that's why I do this podcast, so that way I could promote guys like you who are already in the business, so people can find you and help get you guys word out. Yeah.
And vice versa. We're all working together, so we'll be
Absolutely.
cross promoting
I
all
want to make
this.
a community that we all come together and help each other out.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great.
To that end, what was the last local show you went to?
Oh, I answered that. 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I finally got to see Gilda Lily here in Tacoma. And I finally got to see the brand new upgraded version of the Airport Tavern. Their stage is absolutely beautiful.
I've
And
heard
they've
good
been working,
things.
yeah, they worked on that during COVID. And so I finally got to see the inside of it. And it was absolutely amazing. It was amazing. So that was my last show. Hopefully, when I graduate next month, I'll be able to do more shows. That's my goal
Yay.
anyway. Yeah, I miss it a lot. All right. So plug yourselves. So where can people find you? We'll start with Steve first.
Yeah, the main place where you can find me. At least for independent music promotions, with an S on the end, it's independentmusicpromotions.com. From there, I'm pretty much on most social media. So Facebook, Independent Music Promotions, Instagram, strangely, since they're the same company, they allow one less character. So it's without the S. That being said, if you go to independentmusicpromotions.com, you can find me everywhere. As far as a musician, you can find me if you look up Post Death Soundtrack. And that is anywhere, iTunes, Bandcamp, Spotify, etc.
Okay. And anywhere that I exist on the internet, I exist as the Morgue Ann. That's the, like, one and only morgue, like where you send the bodies, and Ann with an E. That is Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, including just themorgueann.com. If I'm on the internet somewhere, if I'm on a platform, the Morgue Ann.
All right, I gotta
I'm
find you on
sorry
Blue
to.
Sky. Yes.
I feel like where you send the bodies would be a great song name. I just like as a ly as a as a lyricist, I just noticed these things all over the place. That would be a great song.
I am not a musician, but I do a lot of talking into microphones, and I think joke writing and lyric writing are very similar. There's a rhythm you're trying
Oh,
to
yeah.
follow, you're trying to hit your beats. But yeah, that's trying to spell it out for people, and I'm just like, it's where you send the bodies.
Yeah. Okay, I won't I'll let you have that. I won't take that from her.
No, I use you can use it. You just gotta credit me.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. And I'm Shelton. Let's talk about the music. I am the host. You can find everything on social media. I am on go to let's talk about music.com. Facebook. I'm not on Twitter, but I'm on Instagram, TikTok. I'm on Blue Sky. And so yeah, just go to let's talk about the music. It has everything on there. So I want to thank you guys for being here. I do appreciate it. And hope you guys stick around for backstage conversation. Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, thanks for listening to Let's Talk About the Music. I hope you enjoyed today's topic. Remember, the show is more than just a podcast. It's a multimedia experience. You can enjoy the content as a blog, a both audio and visual format. Or stay tuned to connect with other conversation. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe, like, and hit that subscribe button, as that way you'll never miss an episode. Also, be sure to sign up for our newsletter for our latest update and exclusive content. Until next time, grab your headphones or tune in visually, and let's keep that music journey together. Let's talk music, because the music is everywhere.